The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition for this week, where we're going to talk about our version of the bucketing strategy and how it integrates into our secure retirement income process. So we've had some questions about this bucketing strategy recently. We thought we'd make it a topic for an EDU show. So we're going to get into a little depth here and describe specifically how we view bucketing and how it kind of fits into the overall strategy during your retirement for how to fund things such as your minimum dignity floor and your fun stuff, your entertainment, and things that make life exciting more than just the minimum dignity floor. I'm here with Jim Salnier. My name's Chris Stein. And Jim is sitting patiently waiting for me to stop talking. So
You're doing good on the introduction. This EDU show is going to be very, very similar to what Chris said, but slightly different. I'm going to take not a new approach.
Oh, you're throwing me a curveball already.
Not trying to, but we received an email from a gentleman. One email, three separate questions. Two questions relate to bucketing. One question relates to a solo 401k, which we will not get to on the EDU show, because on the EDU show, folks, we dive into one topic, not multiple. So I'll hold off on his solo 401k. But he asked the first question, where would cash value life insurance fit into a bucketing strategy? I might be able to address that today. If not, I can easily give you my opinion of that. But the third question he asked, he said, finally, I enjoy your show. He's a new listener. And I have only recently started listening. Is there an episode that exclusively discusses your bucketing strategy? I listened to the one you did on September of 2018 and received a lot of information from it. That September show is probably the only show where Chris and I delved and talked about bucketing only. So a lot of the information, listener, that you got from that show, I'm not going to rehash here because he's already listened to the September 2018 show.
Yeah, that wasn't an EDU show, though.
No.
Because that was before EDU appeared.
But it did cover a lot of our approach to bucketing. What I want to do is not necessarily tell you how Chris and I have a bucket one, a bucket two, a bucket three, and how we fund it. I want to tell you why I so vehemently believe in bucketing, why I think the financial services industry is finally waking up to it, but they still got it wrong. And they don't, the academics don't understand the human approach to retirement planning. And I want to share that, Chris, with our listeners, because here in my hand is a synopsis of a study that just came out of Barcelona, Spain, from a gentleman named Javier Estrada, an academic, otherwise known as a professor, at the IESE Business School in Barcelona, Spain. And although Professor Estrada is probably very brilliant and lives in a beautiful, beautiful part of the world, I think he missed the boat yet again on bucketing, because his study is almost an anti-bucketing study. Mm-hmm. He feels bucketing should not be used, and he lists his reason why, but he misses the boat again, Chris, because he says he comes to the conclusion, bucketing, you can still run out of money, and you are better off using a Monte Carlo probability statistic, because in his analysis, you run out of money fewer times under that scenario than under a bucketing scenario. I don't want you to run out of money at all. And that's where the academics are missing this.
That's where the Monte Carlo simulation has a weakness in our opinion about how we look at retirement planning. For those of you who don't know Monte Carlo simulation, it's essentially a way of running hypothetical results over time for something like a retirement plan or an investment portfolio, where the computer will pretend that it's living the next 5, 10, 20, 30 years over and over and over and over again.
It's like Groundhog Day.
And exactly. It's much like Groundhog Day. That's how I explain it to my students. And it records the results of each of those runs of a hypothetical 10, 15, 30 years of whatever you're analyzing. In this case, we're talking about a retirement plan that contains spending and earnings and maybe rates of return on investments and those sorts of things. And because it can't predict the future, essentially it runs maybe 1,000 predictions of the future and then records how frequently does that future end up as a quote, failure. And the failure when people are doing retirement analysis, and I haven't read this particular paper, but I suspect it's like all the others, where if you run out of money before your assumed mortality date, it's considered a fail. But if you end up with at least a dollar at the end, it's considered a success. And the Monte Carlo scenarios are run, and they run 1,000 of them, and they will tell you that, for instance, it's typical into the industry to think that if 90% of the time it's a success and not a failure, that's pretty good. That's pretty darn good. 95% is even more robust, meaning it's only going to fail 5 or maybe 10% of the time. Now, some people will say if you run the Monte Carlos, even if you get an 80% success rate, that's good enough. What Jim and I have always asked the question, or at least wanted you to consider asking yourself, what happens to you in that 5, 10, or 20% in the Monte Carlo? It's a failure. You run out of money. What's your situation going to be if that happens? We despise that approach because we don't want 5, 10, 15, 20% of our clients to have a failed retirement. So we use a different approach. We will run Monte Carlo analysis. We have the capabilities and we have some very powerful software that will do such a thing. So if someone wants us to run Monte Carlo and stress test their plan for the future and see if it's in the 90, 95% success rate, something like that, we can do that for somebody. But instead, we don't want people to stay awake at night worrying about what if I'm in that 5%? Because that means if there's 100 people, 5 of them standing in front of you are going to run out of money, or maybe 10. You don't want to be one of those. It'd be great if the chances were zero or as close to zero as possible. Or more specifically, when we have people follow our approach, if they, quote, run out of money, say run out of invested assets, that doesn't mean they run out of income and the ability to have a minimum level of dignity for the rest of their lives, even if their plan you might consider or their investment portfolio was a fail, meaning it died prematurely. So that's kind of our situation. And maybe I just wanted to say that or describe that for people who maybe have heard about Monte Carlo, weren't quite sure what it was. Hopefully that clarified it for those who...
It does, and I'm glad you did that. I was assuming a lot of people understood mm-hmm. that, but we can't make that assumption, especially on the EDU show. People are looking for clarification and education. What I'm trying to drive home on this paper, and the name of the paper is, and it reads like an academic study, which it is. I was going to say unfortunately. I guess I should. Failure, from failure to success, replacing the failure rate. That's part of his analysis. He came out with several papers. And what he was trying to do, and where I think he misses the boat, he said, and his conclusion was based on a simple fact, Chris, he used a very basic bucketing approach, but he took the approach, he only had two buckets, He took the approach of bucketing and compared it to safe withdrawal rates using Monte Carlo probability statistics and found that more retirements would have failed, and he used 115 years of data through 21 countries. So I'm not saying he didn't use a wide scope of data. He did. But he said people still failed with bucketing, and they failed more often than if they just did a safe withdrawal rate. Of course, he never describes success, and that's one issue I have. Was success a dollar left in the portfolio at the end of the stated 30-year period he was analyzing, or was there more? But where he also misses the boat, bucketing is not about successful spending. It's not a strategy to never run out of money. It isn't. There is no, absolutely no way to not run out of money with bucketing or a safe withdrawal rate. You always will run that risk. The only way to protect yourself from running out of money is to do an analysis where you determine what we call your minimum dignity floor, and you make a concerted effort to protect that minimum dignity floor with lifetime guaranteed secure income. Bucketing, at least the way I believe in it, not the way this academic believes in it, it never was. I don't know how you teach it to your students, Chris, but I never studied and learned bucketing as a mechanism to guarantee a retirement. It's a spending strategy to overcome behavioral biases people are going to be faced with. And that's what I'm going to talk about today. Right. And this professor, in defense of him, recognizes that. And he defends bucketing. He says, look, I understand bucketing is popular, and he lists why. His point is, there's no guarantee with it, and you can still run out of money. Absolutely. And we have never, ever approached bucketing as a way to guarantee you will never run out of money.
Right.
And his conclusion is based on why you run out of money in his analysis. Why bucketing failed more than a safe withdrawal rate. He said it's because bucketing forces you to take money, sell money that's up, sell a portfolio that's up, and not reinvest it in something that's down, instead spend it. Refill bucket one, as he, at least he calls it bucket one like we do. Bucket one, your cash reserves. And he said should have 2 years of cash in for spending, which we agree with. So I agree with him on that. He only had two buckets on his, bucket one and bucket two. Bucket two was investments.
It's because he doesn't create the
The buffer bucket.
The buffer or the minimum dignity floor piece.
He doesn't, that's what I'm
getting
to.
He doesn't address the what happens if you are unlucky enough for your portfolio to, quote, fail
exactly.
or run out of money. Everyone is so consumed with what's the chance of it happening. There's very few people on this planet that have such a huge portfolio that the chance is zero. And even those, you can go crazy with spending and drain any size portfolio. But let's say you're rational, not an overspender. Certainly, if your portfolio is big enough, the chances of it running out are practically zero. Right?
If you live moderate means
and you have $500 million, the chances that's going to run out before you die, very small.
No. I agree right? there, but so, that's not but, what but, we're talking about
no,
here.
I know, but the point is, it isn't about, you know, is it going to fail for some people? Unless you're in that extreme group where there's no chance of failure, you open yourself up to a chance of running out of money in your portfolio. Our concentration, and this is what I think resonates with people, is we address the what happens if it does happen? What happens if you do run out of money in their portfolio? You've got the minimum dignity floor.
And that's, and the minimum dignity floor isn't even if you run out. So we're talking all over the place because Chris and I understand our process. I'm going to slow down here and again explain. It's a recent study that came out that was saying bucketing is not foolproof. You can still run out of money. I don't think you need an academic study for that. Bucketing was never approached as a guarantee for not running out of money. Bucketing, by people who truly understand it, will explain to you it is not an asset growth strategy. It is an asset depreciation or spending strategy. My firm, folks, specializes in distribution planning. You cannot use accumulation rules in a distribution portfolio. Yet this academic approached things from an accumulation approach. He's saying you can end up with more money if you didn't bucket, because when you rebalance a withdrawal portfolio, this was his point, you are going to sell high and buy low, as opposed to selling high and spending that money and consuming it. He said you're going to rebalance and buy low, and that can support your portfolio longer than bucketing, which when a bucketing portfolio rebalances, it sells the gain, doesn't buy anything that's gone down, it actually consumes it. Well, duh, that's the whole point. Now, he does address in his study that the Monte Carlo safe withdrawal rate does expose you, though, to sequential risk, and that there were many periods where sequential risk caused the Monte Carlo portfolio to run out. At least he addresses that, but he's missing the boat. You don't bucket as an accumulation strategy. You bucket as a decumulation strategy. That's the damn point of it. But then he does reference, and I'm going to quote from some of this, and at least the analysis, the summary, I don't know if the report itself, I haven't downloaded it yet. It pains me to read academia. It's written in English, although I'm sure this one's written in Spanish, but it's English you don't understand. And it's like, what's your point?
You'll get there on page 52.
But there is a synopsis, and they say, and they recognize, and I'm going to quote from this synopsis. Another problem that needs to be considered, and they're talking about safe withdrawal rate, probability statistics, is that all investment returns are not consistent. And systematic withdrawals from your portfolio during bear markets, put in English, folks, spending money when your portfolio is down, can cause the portfolio values to fall to levels from which they may never recover. Mm-hmm. Put in English, you can run out of money.
Right.
Then they give an example. For instance, over the 26-year period from 1973 through 1999, the U.S. Standard & Poor's 500 Index provided a nominal return of 13.9% a year and a real return of 8.2%. I'm going to let our in-house academic give you explain what nominal and real is.
So nominal return is if you just looked at your statements, if somehow you had invested in a portfolio that mimicked the S&P 500, your statement would reflect what looks like, you said, a 13-point-something percent.
13.9 according to the summary.
13.9%. The real return is once you consider the lack or the degradation of spending power of those dollars. In other words, you factor in inflation. The real return, what you really get to spend, what you really get to benefit from that, taking into consideration dollars will have declined in value over that same period of time, was in fact the 8.2% was real. So that's okay. Taking into consideration inflation over that same period.
And then he goes on, with hindsight, one might think that given an 8.2% real return, it would have been safe for that retiree to withdraw 7% a year in real terms. That is, take 7% of the portfolio starting value and increase the withdrawals by inflation. Unfortunately, had you done so and retired at the end of 1972 and followed that strategy, you would have run out of money in 10 years. Mm-hmm. And then he goes on to explain it was because of sequence of return risk, what Chris and I call sequential risk. That, folks, is the problem with a safe withdrawal rate. At least he addresses that. And then he goes on to say, in his opinion, there are four reasons why people should consider bucketing. Remember, Chris, he still doesn't support bucketing. He says you can end up with more money in the success years. I like how they put that.
Yeah.
If you didn't bucket. And again, he lists his
reasons. If you're a winner, you're a little bit bigger winner.
You get a little bit more. But he gives four reasons why bucketing is still popular. Mm-hmm. And his first reason, there is no need to understand nor adjust for sequence of return risk, or nor do you need to realize selling an asset after its price has fallen is not a good idea. In other words, it can help protect people from their mistake, which is they don't understand sequence of return risk. They're being told by a accumulation advisor, the S&P has averaged 8.2 on a real basis. We're only removing 7, which is a crazy withdrawal rate. But we're removing far less than what the average return was. And I've seen that chart, by the way, folks, and a 5% withdrawal rate during that same time period. This is an Ibbotson's research study. You run out of money in 19 years instead of 10.
Yeah, you still run out.
Yeah, you run out in 19. So that was Ibbotson years before this gentleman's study came out, trying to show you sequence of return risk. And I think Ibbotson was one of the first that brought it to the forefront, sequence of return risk. So his number one reason why bucketing is still popular, and I agree with it, it helps battle sequence of return risk. And he admitted that in his study, that there were periods of time where bucketing strategies didn't run out of money and withdrawal rates did because of sequence of return risk. Mm-hmm. But again, as Chris just said, his poo-pooing, and I know that's not a professional word, of bucketing because in the success years you had more money in a safe withdrawal rate strategy because you sold high and bought low as opposed to selling high and spending it, to me, is not reason enough to embrace sequence of return risk through a safe withdrawal rate. I hate probability statistics, safe withdrawal rate. I despise it because to me it doesn't work. And his time period ends, Chris, in 1999. In this summary, I'd rather, at least the summary, I haven't read the whole report. The gentleman who is providing the summary, I got this from a service that I subscribe to that summarizes research reports for advisors. The person who summarized it is only referencing the 1999. I wish they would have went through 2008, maybe even through 2018, rather, just to see what it would have looked like. Okay, number two reason, bucketing is comforting. It enables a retiree to stop worrying about having to liquidate assets. And I love that.
That is a point that is minimized by too many academic studies and by too many advisors, actually.
Absolutely.
This is a big deal.
This is why I do it.
To real people.
It's why I do it.
Right.
And that's what I'm going to get at shortly.
Read it again. This thing is a big deal. This isn't just
It is comforting, enabling a retiree to stop worrying about the possibility of having to liquidate assets at a bad time.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, it is consistent with the well-known behavioral biases of human mental accounting. A retiree is likely to find the separation between their withdrawal account, or the money they're spending, and their investment account appealing. Mm-hmm. That's why in my practice, folks, I recognized this, Chris, 20 years ago. What do I call a client's investment account?
Crazy uncle.
Crazy uncle. We specifically separate our clients' spending money, which I reference as your spending account, your boring account, your safe account, your buffer asset, whatever euphemism we want to give. But whenever I talk about their investments, whether they're managing their investments on their own or they've hired my firm to help them, I call it crazy uncle. Because everybody knows a crazy uncle or other family member in their family that when they do something stupid or nutty, you're like, "Ah, well, that's Jim. He's the crazy uncle." That would be what my nephew Evan would say. I call it crazy uncle, specifically.
Because it's unpredictable. It's all over the place.
And clients love knowing, hey, how'd crazy uncle do? They're not worrying. I didn't have clients panicking when the market was acting crazy, October, November, December. There was no Santa Claus rally this year. There was a lot of volatility. The people who were calling me were iTunians, either in our planning queue that haven't got through it yet, or people just panicking because they didn't approach bucketing. But people who have a bucket portfolio, I would have went tisk, tisk, tisk if you call me in the middle of a little mini bear market, your spending is safe. So his third reason, I fully believe, again, the behavioral biases.
Yeah, so to maybe clarify people who aren't as familiar with bucketing, if you had everything just in one bucket that you're spending out of, then when you have this volatility, this crazy uncle effect, it's mixed in there with all your other stuff, and people start to feel uneasy about taking money out of that bucket to spend it or go on vacation or whatever. But when you've separated it, you have, and this is the that mental accounting.
I call it visualized asset allocation.
So that bias, that human behavior thing where we've got mental accounting where we can kind of in our brain separate, okay, we got crazy uncle over here separate. My other account where I'm using money to go on vacation, it's not attached directly to crazy uncle. I don't have to feel worried about that. No. That's separate over here. When arguably, if you had the two buckets mixed in the same one, the numbers, if we did it academically, the numbers really wouldn't look that much different. But you've got now this human angst that you incur when you got crazy uncle in there mixing up with all the rest of your stuff that needs to be more predictable so that it's there for you when you want to go on vacation.
So, and his fourth reason, it's easy to implement. A retiree.
That's another good one.
Yeah, I don't like that one either. A retiree only needs to determine their annual withdrawals and protect those funds by parking them in safe liquid assets.
That's a simple bucketing approach.
Yeah, it's. Pretty simple. Bucketing is easy.
And overall, it's pretty simple.
Okay.
You just don't want to make it overly simplistic.
What I want to get into, though, Chris, and get people to understand why I disagree with the study, which I didn't fully read yet. I've just read a 10-page executive summary. Again, his point is, with bucketing, he found people still ran out of money. No surprise there. You have never heard me on this show. In the 8 years now, Chris and I, or 7 years, however long it's been that we've been doing this, you have never, ever heard me say bucketing is a way to ensure you don't run out of money. Absolutely not true.
No.
I said bucketing is a way to get you to spend money because emotionally, folks, you're not going to want to. So let me walk you through this, because if you're listening to this show, if you're listening to my podcast, you're a do-it-yourselfer. And you've probably spent the last 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years managing investments and forming an accumulation portfolio. Now take your accumulation portfolio hat off, put on your retiree hat, and listen to why everything you did to grow your portfolio is not the way you are going to manage it to retire and spend. Because if you do, if you follow accumulation rules in a decumulation portfolio, especially if you're going to do a quote-unquote safe withdrawal rate and probability Monte Carlo statistic, you're setting yourself up for failure. Let me explain where bucketing fits in, at least with us. What we first do with anyone who wants our help with a bucketing plan is walk them through a retirement analysis, whether they do it with us, do it on their own, do it with someone else. But Chris and I have a very disciplined approach, and he summarized it. You can listen to previous podcasts. You can go to my website and watch the video on the homepage where I walk people through how I became a retirement planner. From a cop to a retirement planner. Because I bought strawberries for a 78-year-old woman when I was a 32-year-old cop who couldn't afford them in a grocery store. I'm not going to bore you with the whole story, but what she did in the parking lot changed my life forever. She actually grabbed me by the shoulder and kept me from walking away from her because she was incessantly thanking me like I parted the Red Sea for her. And she pointed her finger in my face and she said, "No, you don't understand." And I said, "What don't I understand?" And she went on to say, "I am 78 years old and live on just Social Security. And my next check doesn't come for 10 days. And if you didn't buy me strawberries, I wouldn't have any. And I love strawberries." I was floored by that. Because I started thinking to myself, Chris, for the first time in my life, I'm only a 32-year-old testosterone-filled cop. 4 years on the SWAT team, loving running around, arresting bad guys. First time in my life, I thought, I'm going to be old someday. And I had no grandparents. They had died years earlier. And my parents were only in their 50s. I didn't know elderly people. And I thought to myself, this is it. This is what happens to us. We grow old, stop working, and you can't even afford strawberries? That changed my life forever. Fast forward to today, I'm now a retirement planner. But it's because of her, I enrolled at Boston University and started studying financial planning. Because of her. 2 years later, they put me on the night shift again, the swing shift we called it, four to mids, from the day shift. Excuse me, the other way around. They put me on the day shift from the swing shift. It gave me my nights free. And BU's program was a night class program. Mm-hmm. And I could go to Boston University and start studying financial planning. I never forgot that story. And then when I hired Chris, probably 11 years ago now, I told you that story. And I said, our process is going to help people protect. I called it required expenses. It's only recently I started calling it your minimum dignity floor. And we believe vehemently, because bucketing and safe withdrawal rates do not protect you from running out of money. I said to Chris, none of our clients should ever not be able to afford strawberries. If you want to buy strawberries, buy strawberries. And we designed your minimum dignity floor to reflect five key elements of expenses from smallest to largest. Groceries, utilities, transportation, which is the maintenance, upkeep, and replacement of just one vehicle. 2, 3, 4, 5 vehicles, that's something different. Housing and health care. Those are the five categories. We believe you should be creating your own minimum dignity floor, price it to reflect your lifestyle, your living standard, the kind of house you want to live in, the kind of car you want to drive, the kind of food you want to eat, and the kind of utilities you want to consume. And then you design that minimum dignity floor, you come up with it, you project it for inflation, and then what do we believe, Chris? How do you cover that minimum dignity floor?
Since those expenses are going to go until the last days of your life on this earth, you've got to have resources that will be there until the last days of your life on earth. In other words, you need secure, predictable, protected income to afford to pay the expenses to maintain your minimum dignity floor. Your minimum dignity floor should not be susceptible to interest rates going up or down, stock market going up or down, crazy uncle being crazy, all that stuff. None of that should have any effect on your minimum dignity floor.
Exactly.
It's the safety net, if you will.
It's bucket four
if things
in our
go
bucketing strategy.
To hell.
Exactly.
You're never going to be worse off than your minimum dignity floor.
That's the point. And I had an iTunian I chatted with on the phone about 3-4 months ago say, "Jim, I'm not quite sure about this minimum dignity floor idea. I think I shared this with you, Chris. And I said, well, what do you mean you're not sure about it? He says, well, if I run out of money, if I spend it all, and I'm stuck on my minimum dignity floor, I'm eating rice and beans. And he says, I don't like rice and beans. And I said to him, what do you mean you're eating rice and beans? And he says, well, my minimum dignity floor, that's the minimum amount of money I need, right, to just barely survive? I says, no, you don't get it.
That's why we call it minimum dignity, not bare subsistence living in a tent.
I said, the minimum dignity floor is created by you. And once I walked him through it and got him to understand, you design it. We'll project it for you if you hire my firm to do the analysis for you. We'll project it, but it's going to reflect your groceries. I said, do you eat rice and beans now? He said, no. I said, then you won't when you're 85.
Unless you
want it. But we're going to design it to reflect your food, your utilities, your transportation, your housing, and your healthcare needs. Once he got that, it's like a light bulb went off. He says, now I get it. And then we believe, without walking you through it, because that's not the point of today's show, we'll do it on another show, our whole process, we believe that your minimum dignity floor should be covered for the rest of your life with lifetime guaranteed secure income, which in short is Social Security, pensions, and income annuities. That's why Chris knows so much about Social Security in this office. We believe vehemently in it. And when we can show people how to optimize it and how good it is, they understand. Mm-hmm. Looking at it isolated, Chris, as just covering their minimum dignity floor, people are floored at how valuable Social Security is. Mm-hmm. They're used to looking at it through all their income. When we say, no, just these five key elements, and they realize it covers most of it, they're thinking, oh my God, Social Security is a lot better than I thought.
And that's why I learned it, actually, is because as we realized how important it is for people to have this secure income sources to fund their, what we called at the time, required expenses, but our minimum dignity floor, we wanted to make sure we could find ways to eke out every possible benefit from Social Security, since it's such a substantial part of people's batch of secure income.
Get as much blood from that stone.
Exactly. I then found, you know, the basic understanding people have of Social Security is just barely surface level, that there's all
most
this complexity.
Most advisors barely have understanding
so
of Social
I started
Security.
On that journey of learning everything I possibly could about Social Security. And I'm still learning stuff.
Yeah.
Even to this day, it is extraordinarily complicated. Luckily, these days now we have some very powerful software that helps us run analysis. But just taking it for granted or just kind of treating it without any seriousness, you're possibly costing yourself funding of your minimum dignity floor.
Absolutely. So we believe in Social Security, pensions, and income annuities, and we walk people through in our process how to optimize whichever ones they have. We help put in plan protections. I'm not going to get into it. We'll do an EDU show on our process. But now you understand a little bit about what I'm getting at, folks. We don't do a safe withdrawal rate for your minimum dignity floor because it's a probability statistic and no advisor using Monte Carlo is going to guarantee that if sequential risk does burn you, they'll make up the difference. And no one doing bucketing had better be telling you that bucketing is a guarantee that you're not going to outlive your money. It is not. We don't feel your minimum dignity floor should be left to any ambiguity. And we help you, or you should if you're doing it yourself, be figuring out a way to cover, isolate, determine, and cover your minimum dignity floor. But I also share with people that retirement planning is a seesaw ride. And the younger you, the 50, 60-year-old retiree is on one end of the seesaw, and the 80, 90-year-old retiree you is on the other side of the seesaw. And anything you do to try to help you go up, the younger you go up, maybe spend a little bit more money, maybe not convert any money into a Roth because you don't want to pay the taxes now, it's going to cost the older you because the older you is going to go down. But anything we do to help the older you, maybe put the minimum dignity floor protections in place, Chris, maybe reserve some money for future potential shortfalls or buy a QLAC or something to help provide more income. Anything we do now is going to cost the younger you and cause the younger you to go down a little. What we try to do in a good retirement plan, and we'll try to do, folks, is balance that. Each one of you are going to have to give a little. And what the older you simply wants the younger you to give them is an explicit, not implicit, explicit warranty that they will live the last years of their life in as dignified a manner as possible. That as they start to age and grow weaker physically and mentally and financially, they are not going to have to worry. They are going to be able to take care of themselves. Our minimum dignity floor, folks, even includes soap, shampoo, haircuts, because that is crucially important for retirees to live a dignified life. That's included in there. We put that in there. That's part of your housing expense because we don't know where else to put it. But it's important. And once you can give that explicit warranty to the older you is going to want you to spend money and enjoy yourself. That's why Chris and I talk about the three phases of retirement: go-go, slow-go, and no-go. But we don't talk about go-go, slow-go, and no-go in reference to your minimum dignity floor. There's no go-go phase where your minimum dignity floor is really high. Hey, I'm going to really heat the house during this phase. My utility bills is wicked high. But as I get older and go into the no-go, I'm just going to freeze my ass off. That's not how you do a retirement plan. There's no go-go, slow-go, no-go on the minimum dignity floor. Just like Tom Hanks said, there's no crying in baseball. There's no go-go, slow-go, and no-go on the minimum dignity floor. You want to maintain that minimum dignity floor. But there is a go-go, slow-go, and no-go when it comes to the fun things, Chris. People don't retire and hire us to just protect their minimum dignity floor. They're petrified about spending. And here's where that Barcelona academic did get it right. His number two and three reason: the emotional, the mental accounting of separating your spending money from your investment money, and the behavioral reaction people have to losses. I get news for you people. The minute you retire, and those of you who are 3, 4, 5 years from retirement, probably the minute you experienced the last quarter that was extremely volatile, it's going to freak you out. And you're going to panic. Because you're no longer going to be looking at your investment portfolio as percentage returns or losses. You're going to be looking at dollars. And if you have $1 million portfolio and you're down 5%, that's not a big loss. Hey, I'm only down 5%. Who cares? You will, because you're going to be looking at $50,000. And you're going to convince yourself, I can't go spend any money. I'm down $50,000. Your rational brain of looking at just a 5% loss, which is going to take about a 5.1% return to break even, which the market did in about 3 days, you're not going to be paying attention to that. You're going to be looking at $50,000. So your behavioral reaction is going to be, Chris, let's not go on that trip. Right. Let's not go to Barcelona. Let's not go. If you're my retired wife, we're going to go salmon fishing in Alaska. That might be why I'm still single. But let's not go to Alaska salmon fishing. Let's wait for our portfolio to come back. And that is where you will make the biggest mistake of your life. because you got to understand something, folks. I'm 55. Chris is 50. We're not dumb. We know how this ends. We're not going to get younger, stronger, and healthier. We're going to grow weaker. And we know that as we get into our 60s, that is pretty much our last hurrah. That's why it's called your go-go years of retirement. And it's the only period of time you have left to do the things you want to do. And if you postpone them because your damn portfolio is down, and you're thinking, I'm going to wait for them to come back, you totally miss the boat of what investing for retirement is all about. It's about consuming what you grew. But it's also about not freaking you out unnecessarily. So we always say, if you listen to our previous podcast on bucketing, bucket one and bucket two. Bucket one is 2 years of cash. Bucket two is what we call a buffer asset, which should contain about another 8 to 10 years. Bucket one and two are designed to cover the typical retiree's go-go phase, which is 6 to 10 years. Each phase, go-go, slow-go, and no-go, lasts 6 to 10 years. We know what happens at the end of the last phase. So what we try to get people to understand, if your minimum dignity floor is taken care of, do you really want to expose the last opportunity for you to do go-go phase things, to travel, to go fishing in Alaska, to go to Barcelona, to go see grandkids, to go on a cruise, to go do whatever the heck it is on your bucket list, no pun intended. There's no going back. Because by time you get into your 70s, like it or not, you will be approaching slow-go. Talk to people in their 70s. Talk to people 75, 78, 79, 80. Ask them if they like going flying. Ask them if going to an airport is a pleasurable experience and dealing with the crowds, the bright lights, the noise. Chris and I talk openly about the fact that as we age, the part of our brain that understands financial concepts is beginning to degrade faster and faster. We talk about a Harvard study and a Texas Tech study that show that. We talk that according to Harvard, the pinnacle age for understanding financial concepts for the human brain is age 53. It begins degrading after that. It's not a cliff or I'd be out of job. But I'm not naive to think my brain is not aging. And I know in 20, 25 years, I will not understand financial concepts. But it's not only, Chris, financial concepts. The human brain, as it ages, cannot multitask as fast, cannot process data as fast, is overwhelmed easier. Something that's very easy for a 30-year-old to understand would confuse the heck out of an 80-year-old. Because we know this, you will go through a slow-go phase, Chris. And then as you get into your 80s, you will be in a no-go phase. You may not think this, folks. You may think you're going to be different. You may know an 80-year-old who's an anomaly and may be still living as active a life as they can. But they're not living as active a life as they did in their 60s. But my dad, who's 85, he doesn't do anything. He plays cards and he goes out for breakfast. And he also admitted to me 2 years ago, with much embarrassment in his voice, he didn't understand fractions anymore. And that doesn't surprise me. I knew for years he wasn't understanding math like he used to. So our approach of protecting your minimum dignity floor makes sense when you start looking at that. But our approach to bucketing is to spend during your go-go phase. Right. I don't want our clients or our podcast listeners, Chris, to tell me they didn't go to Alaska fishing this year because their portfolio is down. But as soon as it recovers, they're going to go. Because the last recovery took 6 years. And maybe by then you're 73, 75, 78, 79, 80. And because of a medical issue, there is no more. Bucketing, folks, is a spending plan for your fun money for the go-go, slow-go, and no-go years. So you don't freak out mentally when the market is down. So you don't say, hey, I'm going to wait for the market to recover before I spend this money. You're going to position it, and you're going to understand, and here's where that Barcelona researcher got it wrong. It's not about still growing your damn assets. It's about consuming them. You can't take them with you. Dying with $1 million doesn't get you a better seat at the hand of God. If you don't spend it, someone else will. And it'll be your kids or a charity or the government. You need to spend it. But you have to overcome the behavioral issues a retiree is going to face. And that is you're going to freak out with the markets. But you won't freak out if you know, hey, I got my cash needs for the next 2 years of fun money. So, honey, we still can go ice fishing. Yeah, like I'm going to get my wife to do that with me. We can still go to Alaska fishing. Something tells me I'm going to be going to Alaska alone. We can still go to Barcelona and sun ourselves or go to Italy and do a tour. We've got that money reserved. And this academic researcher totally skipped bucket two, Chris. He didn't have a buffer asset. His notion that there's no rebalancing, that's asinine. Bucket three should be money, crazy uncle, should be money that you don't touch for 10 plus years. This could be ample opportunity to buy low and sell high in bucket three and rebalance. He just looked at a 2 year cash bucket and then 100% in equities.
Right. 2 year cash and a whole bunch of crazy uncle.
That's nuts. So I don't want to get into the specificity of bucketing. Listen to our September 2018 show.
And specifically, I looked it up. For those of you interested in it, it's September 22nd, 2018, and it's in our podcast archive on the website on theretirementandiraShow.com. That's the long version. You can always find your way there through jimhelps.com.
Homepage. Listen, yep. Check out podcast. But that show covers the nuances of how to position 1, 2, and 3, and 4, and how it works. I wanted you to get to understand, in case you start reading on the internet or hearing an accumulation planner who believes in Monte Carlo probability statistics, that, oh, you don't want to do bucketing. Here's this study from new one from Barcelona that poo-poos it, and you can end up with more money if you let me manage it and do all this crazy crap to it that he wants to do. I want you to understand retirement planning is about consuming your assets, and you are going to age physically and mentally. And you don't want to panic and delay your go-go, slow-go, no-go in our firm. Never talks about minimum dignity floor. Don't forget that, folks. Go-go, slow-go, no-go references your fun spending only. And I'll be damned if I am going to do what I am doing for the 30 years. I'm going to retire in another 10. I'm not going to do this for 30 years only to give up going salmon fishing 1 year because my portfolio is down. That's asinine. You have to recognize your go-go years. Spend it. Spend as heavily as you want. I want you to spend. I'm not going to limit you to go-go spending on a 4% withdrawal rate, Chris, which, by the way, is now 2.8 to 3.2, if you want to listen to the academics now, the safe withdrawal rate. So now it's about 3%. You got $1 million, and you're going to limit yourself to, oh, we can't spend more than $30,000 this year. Bull. Spend 30, 60, 90. Go have fun. If the numbers worked, you got to crunch the numbers first. Let me clarify that. But we don't limit our clients to a safe withdrawal rate on go-go spending. We just ask them, what do you want to spend?
Right. We've created safety not through a specific withdrawal rate, but we've created safety through the minimum dignity floor funding with secure income. That's where our safety comes from,
exactly.
Which then frees you to, in any given year, spend more or less and have fun the way you want to. The older you, the 80, 90-year-old, is giving the 60, 70-year-old permission to go have fun. They want those memories. They want to have those experiences as they're sitting there playing cards and having breakfast with their friends.
Exactly.
Instead of stealing those from them, they're not going to be happy that you've got a few extra dollars in the bank sitting there for them while they're sitting there wishing they had done all these things in their 60s and 70s. The bucketing, that as we approach it, gives you permission, mental permission. It's not that we're not giving you permission per se. It's your money. You can do with it whatever you want. But you have to give yourself permission to spend it in the way that enhances your life the way you want it to.
And I think all these academic studies, especially the safe withdrawal rate study, doesn't take into account people's aging. They're not going to spend as much. And it artificially, and Wade Fow, Professor Fow, is finally waking up to this and writing about it, where he is saying, well, wait a minute. Safe withdrawal rates not only expose you to sequential risk, which he's been touting that horn for a long time, it exposes you to not enjoying yourself earlier in life, unnecessarily constraining spending when you have the health and inclination to do it.
And he's describing something I consider an additional failure via Monte Carlo results. They always talk about the failure being you run out of money, but think about the scenarios they run in the Monte Carlo where things go really well for you and you end up with millions of dollars at the end. That's not success.
You could have spent
it. That's a failure. Exactly. Just like running out of money. That was a failure because
you didn't
enjoy yourself with that money earlier on. You left a big pile to be, I guess, shoveled on top of your casket as they lower you into the ground.
Or spent by the government, a charity, or your beneficiaries. Yeah. And they'll thank you.
Hopefully.
So that's what we, again, folks, retirement planning is all we do. It's not a bullet point on our website listed under dozens of other services. So we understand distribution planning. We know what we're doing. Take this show to heart. Listen to it. If you're planning your own retirement, make sure you're implementing and understand why we believe in the minimum dignity floor, secure income. And when you bucket, you're bucketing to spend without having to constrain yourself in your last go-go phase ever. You're not 20, 30, 40, 50 anymore. We're going to be 60, 70, and 80. Our go-go phases are dying. No pun intended. So are we. You're not going to be doing it, and you're going to want memories. And to unnecessarily constrain your spending in your 60s or 70s, your first go-go phase, which is only 6 to 10 years, I think is foolish. That's my 6 to 10 years of spending when I retire. I ain't cutting it for anything. And I'm going to have fun because I know it's my last hurrah. Anyways, we do this for a living, even though we are in Colorado. We do work with people throughout the United States. Longtime listeners know that. If anything that we ever say on this show or others seems to resonate with you and you're wondering if we can help you, don't hesitate to reach out to us. Go to Jim Helps, jimhelps.com. Go to jimhelps.com. Click on the Contact Us button, and you can schedule what we call a coffee and second opinion. It's right there on the homepage, somewhere in the upper left. You'll see it. And you can schedule your own phone call with us, and we'll see if there's a way we can help you or not. What makes our firm unique, especially for do-it-yourselfers, you don't have to worry about us trying to get your money to manage. You can keep your money at Vanguard and manage it there all you want. We don't care. You actually pay us for our time. Go figure. You're going to pay us to run and help you run any analysis you want us to see. And that's how we work. Now, if you do need help managing your assets or even not managing it, just taking that burden off your shoulders so you can go do something else, absolutely we offer that. But it's not what our main driving focus is. It's doing sound retirement plans based on what we call our secure retirement income process of a minimum dignity floor, secure income, and a bucketing for spending during your go-go years and, to a lesser degree, your slow-go years. You don't bucket anymore when you're in your no-go years. But if any of that seems appealing to you and you want to find out if there's a way we could help you or work with you or proof your money, proof your analysis, not proof your money, that's why we call it a coffee and a second opinion. We'll let you know if we think we can help you or not. So just reach out to us. You can go to our website again, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com, and move forward from there.
Great. Well, appreciate being on the show. These are always fun. When you get all animated.
When I get going,
excited.
Yeah, sit back, shut up, and just let me go.
So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new show. On today's show, we discuss QLACs, or Qualified Longevity Annuity Contracts, which are fixed insurance products. QLACs are offered by Jim Sollinger & Associates, LLC, but are not offered by Cambridge Investment Research, Incorporated.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research, Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Sollinger & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Sollinger & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.